Case number 22-3087, United States of America versus Troy Anthony Smock, also known as Kenneth Harris, also known as Tony Sanders, also known as Vincent Shelton, also known as Troy Perez, appellant. Ms. Wright for the appellant, Ms. Fleming for the appellee.
Good morning, Ms. Wright.
Good morning, may I please the court. Lisa Wright for Mr. Smock, so I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. The district court here erred in modifying Mr. Smock's supervised release condition to add a forced installation of computer monitoring software without properly weighing the public's interests against the deprivation of Mr. Smock's liberty. Some brief background, the original PSR mentioned computer monitoring slash search, but didn't have any reference to any software. The software reference first appeared in the probation officer's sentencing format. It's not clear defense counsel saw that. At sentencing, the court read the sentencing format.
Why should we presume that defense counsel didn't read the pre-sentence report?
Not the pre-sentence report, the sentencing format that comes at the back of the probation officer's recommendation. It's my understanding that counsel doesn't always get that. I notice it's not, it doesn't have a number on the docket to even click on. So I think that means that it may have been inaccessible even to counsel. I'm not sure. And so what the court read really was a little bit nonsensical at sentencing. Of course, there was no appeal. He waived his appeal. So that was that. He finished his 14-month sentence a few months later, and then 6 months after that, probation came to him and advised him that he had the right to a hearing before any, quote, unfavorable change in his release conditions. I asked him to waive that, and he declined. So the probation petitioned to modify and add this software installation requirement, which the court did over counsel's objection that the 3583D standard had not been met, and this appeal is of that modification order. The district court was required to weigh the deprivation of Mr. Smock's liberty against the need for deterrence and public safety and to choose the least restrictive alternative to accomplish those goals, and Melania requires a narrow tailoring to the purposes of the restriction. And the court here purported to weigh and balance and choose the least intrusive means, but that evaluation was really impossible because the court didn't identify the scope and target. There was no restriction that the monitoring was enforcing or any description or thought as to how the monitoring would take place. It seems that the nature of the monitoring wasn't really considered and that the monitoring condition seemed to just be presented to the court as a less restrictive alternative to a computer ban or an internet ban or a restriction, but not whether what monitoring options might be and whether the monitoring option that was being
Where did the defense attorney say, this is how we think that this should be restricted, you know, this and not this? I don't see that was ever said to the district court.
Well, he was objecting generally to this deprivation of liberty.
I mean, that's my point. But that seems to be a different argument than the argument that you're making, which is that even if the software could have been loaded, it should have had some restriction than just to monitor everything.
I guess the way I'm thinking of it is something was ordered, and that something, which frankly, we don't know what the reality of it is, was the weighing was never done on that something because the something wasn't specified, and nor was there a specification of what it was looking for. And most of these cases, of course, are like child porn cases where there's very few cases that you could find that aren't child porn cases. And so there, obviously, they're looking for images, they're looking for certain things, and you can put in like filtering software, and that's been upheld many times. But it's unclear here, this was just looking for crime, criminal speech, it sounds like. But yet it wasn't even said that. It wasn't said, don't say this, don't do this, don't look here, don't post there. And we're going to monitor you to enforce that. It wasn't paired with anything. And I would point to the Albertson case where they said that, that's the Third Circuit, where they said that software is generally acceptable if the internet restriction to which it applies is narrowly tailored. And that the reasonable method of monitoring and filtering can be reasonable methods of enforcing a more targeted restriction. And there's no problem with the monitoring if it's paired with a narrowly tailored restriction. But here there was, like a free flow.
I'm trying to make sure I understand your argument. Are you saying that at the time of sentencing, Mr. Smocks and his counsel were not on notice that the monitoring that would be done was going to be done using software?
I mean, they were told that at the sentencing. Possibly they saw the format ahead of time. But, I mean, they saw the word software. That's the first time it came up. But the monitoring...
So they knew that it was going to be software, and he waived appeal of supervised release conditions as part of waiving appeal to the sentence unless it was an illegal sentence. So I'm trying to understand then if he waived appeal of supervised release conditions and he knew, at least as of the time of sentencing, that meant that would include software used to monitor. How is it that it's properly before us to essentially revisit whether or not it's appropriate just to load any software on the computer at all?
Well, yeah, I now understand the question. Like, we disagree with the premise that he knew there was going to be software, because what this special condition just says, you must submit your computers or other electronic devices to a search. Wait a minute. Where is it? I'm sorry, I'm in the wrong place. Sorry. To ensure compliance with the computer monitoring condition, you must allow periodic searches. And then there is in that reference to software. But if you just read this or you're just listening to this, you think, okay, compliance with the computer monitoring condition, but you're like, what computer monitoring condition? They forgot to put that in there, essentially. They just have like a heading that says computer monitoring / search. They don't say you are going to be subject. First of all, they don't say you can't do such and such on your computer and we're going to subject you to a computer monitoring condition and then say to comply. So it's not clear that this whole condition has any relevance to him at that point. And he's not objecting to it. He doesn't have a right to appeal it. And it doesn't appear that it's even going to be a problem. And in fact, it isn't a problem for like 6 months when they come to him and they are the ones that say, we want to change
it. They come to him because he's getting out of prison at that point.
Well, right? He'd been out for at least 6 or 7 months at that point when they came to him. He got out, I think, in January, and they came to him in end of July, and then they petitioned early September to have it put in. And they're the ones that said, this isn't covered. This hasn't been ordered. This is new. We're unable. I think they say the current condition does not allow us to do it, and we're unable to install it without. That's what it says in the petition.
When the modifications took place, what was his objection in the district court? What was the basis for the objection?
Well, he said several things, but his overall objection, and he quoted the statute in full. He said that that it had to be the, he wrote 3583. Let me just find that.
I asked that because, as I recall, the government says that a good deal of the argument that you're presenting to us was not presented to the district.
Yes. Well, he called us off. First of all, he quoted 3583 in full, which says, says that the language about you cannot, it has to be a deprivation no greater than reasonably necessary. He called the software, quote, unnecessary and overbroad. And he argued that the, quote, deprivation, including these privacy and interference with his legal work interests, were, quote, not reasonably necessary under the law. So he made a very broad challenge.
There was no objection on the basis that the terms of the monitoring were contradictory.
Right. I mean, right. That's right. But that's not really what we're saying now. We're making the same broad objection that he made at the rehearing.
That's right. If we understand the modification to really be a kind of a clarification of the terms. Would the appeal waiver cover that?
No. I think the Third and the Tenth Circuits have both said that, first, of course, the appeal waivers are construed against the drafter, against the government, and this court has done that and construed them narrowly. And the Third and Tenth Circuit held that appeal waivers don't cover post-sentencing modifications of supervised.
Well, modification, but what if it was a clarification? Would a clarification be covered by the appeal waiver?
Well, again,
I understand that.
I guess if
the
it was,
district court called it a modification and you take it to be a modification.
Yeah.
Assuming that I thought it was a clarification, would the appeal waiver cover that? Because then it would be part of the sentence in this case, wouldn't it?
I guess, yeah, arguably so. I'm not conceding that. But here, the probation characterized it as a change, an unfavorable change. They didn't work. Considering it to be a clarification.
And are we bound by the formalism of that label?
Well, I mean, technically, I mean, you can just read it and it doesn't authorize it. Probation didn't think it authorized it. It didn't authorize it, doesn't authorize it. In fact, it's just sort of nonsensical. It talks about to enforce the computer monitoring condition. And when I first picked up this file, and I knew it had, I just was told, like, this is a computer monitoring condition. I looked at the old JNC as the first thing I looked at, and I read the thing, and I was like, what computer monitoring condition? I mean, that's what you think when you read it. And, yeah, I guess I'm not saying you're bound by what probation said, but it's certainly, they don't think their own terms, and they clearly do have terms to choose from. They just, like, didn't put them in. I mean, they have recommended language and they opted for like sort of the compliance thing instead of the actual imposition. And again, they didn't pair it with any kind of, it's like a free floating monitoring, which in this outside of the like porn context, it's really like, I don't know how anyone, it would be impossible to evaluate it. I think what happened here is the court compared it to a ban and said that's less restrictive than a ban, but they didn't compare it to any other kind of monitoring.
Well, what did the government say that the monitoring would accomplish?
The government?
Probation,
yeah.
Prosecutor, anybody. I mean, what did they say that the monitoring was
would deter
for, and what would it flag or?
Well, they certainly weren't specific. They just said it would deter future criminal conduct, basically. And the judge, when he complained it was going to interfere with the First Amendment, the court said, well, this is only looking at criminal speech. So it seemed like they were saying, don't commit any crimes and we're going to be randomly looking through your computer. I mean, we don't know what they're doing with the computer, but to just look for crime in general. The court said that...
Well, I guess what I'm trying to get at is there evidence in the record that the monitoring software was going to allow someone in the probation office to watch his every keystroke and to look at every email and to look at every web page that he visited? Or is the evidence that software would allow them to kind of go back, and if there was something concerning, they would be able to find it because the software was there that was essentially kind of capturing what he was doing, and they could kind of use that software to search for something?
Absolutely nothing in the record about that, and that's our point. Like, that is our point, that, like, if the court doesn't know what it's ordering, it can't wait. It said that it was...
But if the court... If, like, those points weren't, like, directly made to the district court, then how is the district court erring? I mean, like, what I just said, I don't see where the defense lawyer said that.
Well, because the court has an obligation to weigh, and the judge that we said this doesn't balance. Doesn't allow this, and the judge has this independent thing. It's not like have to ask for each little thing. You're saying weigh this, and if the judge doesn't do that or can't do that because of they don't know what they're ordering exactly, there's no specification. It's covered by the objection, I guess, is what I would say. And the court also said, like, this said the monitoring condition was, quote, limited to balance Mr. Smock's interest with the public's. But that is not, there was no limiting. The monitoring restriction wasn't limiting at all. It just said monitoring and filtering. And again, we point to Albertson and I guess our overall argument is that, like, you know, when the court has to be the one that narrowly tailors it, not, you know, there has to be guidelines. Maybe probation can, like, work out the fine points, right? But the court has to tell them what they're supposed to look for and, like, what scope of places they can look. And if they don't know that, then that's not weighing, that the doing the weighing that we objected couldn't be satisfied. You just aren't doing the right weighing that we asked for.
And where's kind of like your best citation in the record for the argument that you just made, having been made to the district court?
Didn't put the page cite there. It is on, just quickly find that. It's at the modification hearing. No, it's in the it's in the opposition to the petition, and it's on pages 94 or 93 and 94.
Of your appendix?
Yes, of my appendix, where he quotes, the court may order condition of supervised release to the extent it involves no greater deprivation of liberty than is reasonably necessary for the purposes, and quoting the statute. And then he says that it's unnecessary and overbroad and unnecessarily, it's not reasonably necessary under the law, necessarily overseeing communications. So that's what I would say. So we would ask for these reasons that the software installation order be vacated and the case be remanded for the required 3583D inquiry.
Thank you. Ms. Fleming.
Good morning. May it please the court, Mary Fleming for the United States. The software installation condition is part of the original condition of computer monitoring, which Smox did not object to below and is not challenging on appeal. And because the installation is part of the original condition, the appeal waiver bars this appeal. And regardless, the district court did not err in ordering the installation of monitoring software.
So why did the government seek a modification? It was part of the original terms of supervised release.
The probation office sought a modification. The government actually didn't really oppose, but said that they didn't think it was necessary. I don't think the court should read too much into whether probation thought that a modification or clarification was necessary. They have an interest in making sure that all the I's are dotted and T's are crossed.
But the district court found that it was a modification or granted a modification, right?
Right. The court also said that the court didn't think that it was really necessary. It was a clarification that the installation was heavily implied in the original condition. But it seems that everyone just kind of thought, what's the harm in
having treated it as a modification? Why wouldn't it be covered by the appeal waiver?
If it's a true modification, we don't view it as a true modification. Even if it is introducing something slightly new, it's clearly contemplated by the original condition of supervised release.
Well, but so if we have a rule that says, if we were to decide that the appeal waiver bars this appeal, what about modifications that were more substantial?
That's a harder question. We're not pressing that argument if it was an entirely new modification. Whether the appeal waiver.
So you think an entirely new modification would not be covered by the appeal waiver?
Possibly. We haven't aired that argument fully. I think that is a hard question. Here, the appeal waiver is very broad and covers.
So what would be the rule then? The rule is, like, if the court feels like something is a clarification instead of a modification.
I think
The district court said, I'm granting a modification. Use that term. It's a statutory term. So I feel like either modifications are covered by the appeal waiver or they're not covered by the appeal waiver. But I'm not sure how we're supposed to sort out like whether it was like substantial modification or not. That doesn't seem to have any statutory basis or any basis in the appeal waiver.
Here, the original condition referred three times to the installation of monitoring software. This was part and parcel of the original condition. And if we get into a world where any sort of clarification is not covered by an appeal waiver, that could really gut appeal waiver's effectiveness and discourage probation or the court or even the government from agreeing to these clarifications, which doesn't seem to be in the interest of defendants.
Well, Mr. Smock's counsel suggests that a clarification, you know, might be covered by the appeal waiver, but we don't have a clarification here. We have a modification or something that was labeled a modification.
We would ask the court to look at the substance over the form. Again, the original condition requires installation of monitoring software. It refers to that three times. The majority of the condition is about the monitoring software and making sure it's functioning effectively. It really can't reasonably be read any other way. And in light of case law that supervised release conditions are read in a common sense way, with the plain meaning, with the district court's intent in mind, in light of all of that, this is properly characterized as a clarification.
Is this monitoring software on 24 hours a day?
That's not in the record, but that's my understanding that it is.
And so what happens is how does probation utilize it?
I'm happy to answer the question. It's not in the record. My understanding from talking with probation is that it does have continuous monitoring, and then probation occasionally on a periodic basis will go in.
They can sit in front of a screen here in Washington, D.C. and monitor everything that's going on the computer.
I suppose the
reason I'm asking this question is that the condition that was imposed was in two parts. This is after the original sentencing. And one was installed as monitoring computer software, but the second was that it can't be used unless there's reasonable suspicion that there's a violation of a condition of supervision and that the computer device contains evidence of that. Is that what's going on here? I mean, you have a constant monitoring, but you can't use it unless you have evidence, a reasonable suspicion that there's been a violation of the terms and conditions of the supervised release.
That's not how the conditions work. So the monitoring is an ongoing monitoring that probation can look at on a periodic basis. The reasonable search condition in probation and the court said
isn't that a search?
Yes.
If they're monitoring all the time, then that's a search.
Right.
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 But the next condition says you can only conduct the search if you have reasonable suspicion that there's evidence there.
That condition, as the court said, was aimed at ensuring that probation can search computers that are not reported to the probation office. And that's what probation said when they asked for that condition as well. The two conditions are aimed at different things.
I just don't understand how the two can stand together.
Also, that wasn't objected to below. So that argument is for plain error. But again, the reasonable suspicion searches.
Yeah, but it sounds to me like a plain error.
Well, the reasonable suspicion searches are really aimed at computers that were not reported to probation. The monitoring is for the computers that are subject to the monitoring. There might be some overlap there, but they're not inconsistent.
So help me understand whether or not the district court thought that a modification was really needed, the fact of the matter is that we are reviewing an order that is saying that it is modifying the conditions of release. So why shouldn't we treat this? I mean, how can we just say this is a clarification and not a modification when the order says that it is a modification? What authority do you have for that proposition?
Looking at the substance of the court's original order and the substance of the later clarification, I'd also point this court.
They're not necessarily different. A clarification can be a modification, can it? And a modification can be a clarification. I mean, well, you say, well, this is just a clarification. That does not exclude the distinct possibility that it was also a modification of the terms. This far and no further, or you know, one exception or another, they're all clarifications, but they're also modifications, aren't they?
Well, in light of the original order that talks extensively about installation of monitoring software, that this condition was part and parcel of the original condition. And in Love, this court said that it looked to the district court's intent in trying to parse out this distinction. And there was some discrepancy between the oral pronouncement of the court and the written judgment. And the court there said, we're not going to remand for the district court to do this over, where the written judgment was merely clarifying the original order. So under that analysis, there is a distinction, and the court is not bound by formalistic distinctions.
So let's suppose that you have a situation where the original judgment, you know, is clear that installation of the software is permitted. And the way that this was worded is that the way that this judgment was worded, it just says computer subject to computer monitoring, but it didn't really define of like what computers those were. So let's suppose the defendant got a job in an office, and there are 100 people, and they all had computers, and probation said, well, we think that since you could access any of those 100 computers, we should be able to install this software on all of those 100 computers in the office for you to continue working there. And, you know, you should notify these people that their computers are subject to monitoring. But essentially, you have to allow that to happen, or you can't continue working there, or we'll consider it a violation of your supervised release conditions for you to continue working there if we're not allowed to install the software. And the employer says, no, we're not going to let that happen, so we're going to have to let Mr. Smocks go. We'd love to have him stay, but we're just not going to allow probation to monitor all of our computers. Is that covered by a waiver?
So
Mr. Smocks says, I want to, the district court, he challenges that in the district court. The district court says, that's perfectly fine. That's, you know, that's a reasonable modification. You've waived everything. You're going to come here and you're going to say he's waived the right to appeal that.
But that's an extreme example. I do think that under the terms of the condition, it does cover computers that he uses. That doesn't strike me as a modification. But this court also does presume, and this is...
So it would be waived?
I believe so, but probation could always unreasonably implement conditions. There's a lot of discretion afforded to probation offices, and that works because courts assume and presume that that discretion will be exercised reasonably. And if he went back to the court and the court said that's what I ordered, then conceivably that would be waived. I don't know if the government would choose to enforce the appeal waiver in that instance, but that doesn't strike me as a modification under the language that we have here.
This order also applies not just to computers, does it? It's not just confined to computers.
It uses computers as it's defined. Computers are defined broadly under the statute, so it extends
well,
off
yes,
cell phones.
Statute, but it also says computers or other electronic communications. Now it would seem to me that an electronic communication would include telephones and cell phones, and you have to allow or the defendant has to allow searches of that. Does that mean that the probation office can put a wiretap on his phone and then and pull up whatever they want if they have some reasonable suspicion?
That's part of the computer search. That's not under the purview of the monitoring software, but
I know it's not computers. This is broader. It says or other electronic communications. What do you think that entails?
That right. I agree that that's broad. That the burden there is higher. There has to be reasonable suspicion of a supervised release violation, and that's more along the lines of an ordinary search upon reasonable suspicion, which is permitted in the supervised release or probation context, but I agree that that is broad.
I guess follow up on Judge Randolph's questions. What is the meaning of the word search in the modified order that's at A196?
As to how the search would actually be conducted?
Yeah, I mean, why search seems to be something that's different than just the installation of the monitoring software and the monitoring software just operating normally. Search seems to be something different than that. Am I misunderstanding this?
Again, this isn't exactly in the record. My understanding is that a search, it could be conducted, it could be a physical search looking through a computer. It could also be a search through forensic software that is installed on the computer, which is how searches are often done of electronic devices. But it's different than this ongoing monitoring condition that's in the original order.
So help me understand what the district court knew that it was ordering at the time that it made this modification or clarification. Help me understand what was in the record that the district court knew of like how this software would operate, what it would do, how probation would use it, et cetera.
The record shows that Smocks understood this software to be broad. He said that it would cover his third-party communications. He argued that he has a privacy interest in the contents of his devices, that it would monitor his private affairs. Argument was that the monitoring software should not be imposed at all because that would violate his First Amendment rights and his general right to privacy. The court evaluated those arguments and rejected them, and that's why the court weighed monitoring software versus an alternative like a computer ban. But the intricacies of the monitoring wasn't directly raised. It seems from the record that everyone understood that this would be broad.
I mean, he says at one point in his pleading, right, this is going to monitor everything that I do on the internet. right? Doesn't he make that argument?
Yes.
And there's no kind of pushback on the other side that no, that's not what the software does.
Correct.
So we should assume that that's what the software does.
I think that is supported by the record. It wasn't raised below, and under plain error.
What do you mean it wasn't raised below?
The intricacies of how the software worked, whether the district court was required to delve into the details of this. The argument was much more general than that, and under Love and objection, that's raised generally is not enough to put the court on notice of more specific arguments. And it wasn't plain or obvious that the court was required to get into those details, especially because courts often do delegate tasks to probation. For example, in the internet ban context, probation's allowed to decide exceptions to that. And here, the monitoring is not even preventing Smocks from doing anything. It's a monitoring.
Didn't the pre-sentence report itself equate computer monitoring with a search? The pre-sentence report says that.
Right. We agree that it's a search.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah. So under plain error review, at a minimum, the district court's delegation of this to the probation office was not an error.
So give me your best argument as to why, in this case, it would be appropriate for probation to have 24/7 monitoring ability of everything that this defendant does on his computer.
The underlying crime was transmitting threats using a computer. The computer was instrumentality of the crime, and the court recognized that he had used computers in the past to commit crimes. The court found that there was a need for deterrence, especially because at the original sentencing, Smocks did not exhibit remorse and had a history of supervised release conditions. And the court found continued deception. In light of all of that, the monitoring, the computer monitoring, was reasonably related. And Smocks now on appeal is not actually challenging the monitoring itself. That was in the original order, which he's not challenging. It's more about how the monitoring is implemented.
Anything else?
No.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Wright, you were out of time, but we'll give you the, I think, 2 minutes you requested for rebuttal.
Thank you. To be clear, when I say that a clarification might be arguably covered by the waiver, I'm thinking of a situation where there's like almost like a clerical correction or clarification. That wasn't like nothing substantive. I just want to be clear about that. Because I could see like there are, it's like clerical corrections are different. And the fact is that here, before the order, before the modification, the software couldn't be installed, and afterwards it could. So it's clearly substantive. I wanted to point out the Rule 11 colloquy didn't actually incorporate in the waiver the, quote, conditions of supervised release, and the court has looked at that sort of thing as far as when it's construing the waiver and whether it's going to be construed against the drafter and how strictly. I'm not aware of an issue with defendants appealing a bunch of modifications in, like, you know, my 30 years at the FPD. I don't think I've ever seen one until this one. So it's not like something that's this giant gaping hole in the waiver that they couldn't possibly have meant to exclude that, because that would
well,
be such
well, a what are we to take from the original judgment that's at A60 says, you know, to ensure compliance with the computer monitoring condition, the defendant must allow a probation officer to conduct initial and periodic unannounced searches of any computers subject to computer monitoring. And then it says that the searches shall be conducted to determine, among other things, whether, I'm adding among other things, whether the computer contains any prohibited data prior to installation of the monitoring software. So What else could that mean other than monitoring software is going to be installed as part of this condition?
I guess it could mean, like, if you were subject to installation, and it's possible that, you know, there are like conditions that don't always necessarily apply in every respect to a person. So if you're standing there hearing this be read and you're saying this is to ensure compliance with the community monitoring condition, you could be thinking, well, she hasn't imposed a community monitoring condition, so this stuff is just like boilerplate. I guess that's what I would say. The
condition in the second go round that you can't conduct the search probation off until unless you have reasonable suspicion, that's actually favorable to your client, isn't it? You're not attacking that, are you?
Right. I mean, but it does show the nonsensical nature of the conditions as a whole, and I think that's relevant to whether the court could weigh it. That's the kind of the point. If it doesn't make sense, how could it have been properly weighed, the deprivation against the, if it's not clear what it even means. And I just want to say one more thing, the Volcker case, you know, this is really analogous to the, it's impossible to evaluate the minor contact ban when the limits on the ban aren't clear. And I back on that, just want to say one more thing about, just going a little more about the scope of the waiver. We obviously have the circuit courts that have said it doesn't cover this, but if you look at the waiver itself, paragraph D waives the right to appeal the sentence, quote, imposed. And it seems to me that it's clear that it's talking about an appeal. The appeal is a waiver of a direct appeal because it excludes appeal on the basis of ineffective assistance of counsel. And then it has a separate subsection excluding ineffective assistance of counsel from waiver under 2255 collateral attack. So the fact that they put that in there twice, it seems like that first paragraph has got to be referring to the direct appeal. And in the, if an appeal of a modification of the sentence imposed was forbidden, it would say so. But really, this is clearly directed to the appeal that you're about to make, that you would have to make within the 14 days of the judgment. And I think the court said this was limited, but there was no limit. Just on the preservation, that Mr. Smocks objected to the breadth, and the breadth that put the court on notice that there was a need to limit it. And the court said it was limiting it, but there was no limit at all. The search was limited. There had to be reasonable suspicion. It had to be a reasonable time and manner, but the monitoring had no limit. And the last point is that the government says the computer is the instrumentality of the crime, and that's why we get to look all through it 24/7, I guess. But if the threat had been over the phone, could there be a wiretap to just list everything he says over the phone? And Melania made that point when it said that if the defendant in that case had met his trafficking victim through a classified ad in the paper, could you ban him from reading all newspapers? So we would say that's analogous and ask the court to vacate the condition and remand for a balancing under 3583D.
Thank you, Ms. Wright.
Thank you.
We'll take the case under submission.